Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
Really, mostly what I hope is that people see their possibility, right? The ability for them to achieve that goal of starting a family and being able to do it without fear and being able to do it in the way that they want to and that the way that they envisioned. I think that's really what I see the power in sharing this story is, and in providing support, is it's not so that you can have a pregnancy that's ideal or that is exactly like mine. It's so that you can have a story that you want to have and live that out.
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Welcome back, everyone, to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. Today's episode is part two of Coach Jess's pregnancy journey. And I know that we left you hanging on part one, but there was just too much for Jess to share. So I'm glad that you are back for more. In this episode, Jess shares her full birth story, what her blood sugars were like throughout the entire laboring process, her choice to manage her own insulin in the hospital, breastfeeding and blood sugars, and finding balance in her body and mind in the months after giving birth. If you have been loving these podcast episodes, do me a favor if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please go to our show page where it lists out all the episodes and give it the number of stars that you think that it deserves. We're trying to get that rating number up so that other T1Ds can find us and we can be able to impact their lives in a positive way. So without further ado, if you are ready to hear the rest of Jess's story, keep listening and let's rise. Jess, we left everybody hanging with part one of your pregnancy journey. Everyone was like, I'm dying to hear, like, what was the birth story? We need more details. So you're in high demand here. I know it.
Yes. Well, there's more to the story. So let's dive in.
Perfect. Okay. So where we left off, and if you're just listening to this for the first time, definitely listen to part one where Jess talked a lot about leading up to pregnancy, a lot about, you know, her thinking about a hospital birth versus a home birth and who she had on her birth team and her crazy insulin changes throughout the three trimesters and, you know, navigating anxiety, like all of these different things that you're definitely want to hear to set the scene for this part two. But now that, you know, Jess, we got it out of the way, but I want to focus on the day. So Avery's birthday, is it the 27th of July?
23rd.
The 23rd. Okay. I think when we had on our team that like chart of everybody guessing like when he was going to be born, I think I said 27 because I love that number, but I love the number 23 too. And so That's his birthday. Okay. So let's focus on that day. Tell us your birth story. Tell us what that day was like and yeah, just go for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was the day itself. So it's really, I think this is also maybe like a misconception, but if you've never been through a birth or like been near a birthing person, you don't know, like, what is it like? You just kind of know what you see in the movies, but it actually, labor for me started before that day, before July 23rd. He was born in the morning of that day, but it really happened before that. I don't know exactly, but I would say at least, you know, 3 days before that, if not more. But
wow,
what happened was that we had been going to our doctor every week because we had gotten to that point, our OBGYN, because we had gotten to that point where they're like, okay, weekly check-ins from now on, you know, just to see how you're doing, how you're feeling, how the baby is doing. And there weren't really any concerns with him being too big, but I think they were starting to kind of see that I was I believe I was 38 weeks when I actually had him, but this was when we started to talk about, okay, well, you know, what is it going to look like when you get to 40 weeks? That's when at least my doctors started to talk to me about like, okay, are we going to possibly do like an induction or a C-section at, you know, 40 weeks, or like, how do we feel about that? And again, if you remember from part one, I wanted a healthcare team that would be open to options and different decisions. So for my team, we had talked about, okay, induction and C-section are kind of like last resorts. What else can we do? And so they're like, okay, well, you know, they had been always encouraging me to exercise, but like, okay, go home and, you know, do some more exercises, do some squats. There's obviously a bunch of things that doctors suggest. And there's also like old wives' tales, like, you know, eat spicy food, things like that. Something else that my doctor had suggested to me was like, try acupuncture, which I did. And I can't remember what order it went in, but I think first what happened is I went to the doctor and they were like, okay, you know, how are you feeling? Are you feeling pretty good? Yes. All right, go home. I think this is what happened. Yeah. And then I went home. They suggested acupuncture. So I went to see an acupuncturist, and they specialized in, well, not specifically in pregnancy, but that was one of their specialties, is that they, what they did was supposed to kind of bring on labor. So I did that and I had a nice nap while I was in my session and it all happened. And, you know, after that I started to like feel some contractions. So it did actually, I think, start the process for me. So I started to feel contractions after that. And then I had another doctor's appointment and they're like, oh, okay, you're, you know, coming along now. You're starting to be more and more dilated. And since induction is kind of like last on the list, how do you feel about another method of kind of moving things along? How about sweeping your membranes? So that's kind of like where the doctor goes in and like does a sweep. It's not the most comfortable, but it's, at least for me, it wasn't painful and I agreed to it. So they did that. And then after that, I think is when things really started to speed up. And I obviously went back home. I was feeling more and more contractions. I think I went on a walk with Ali. There's actually a video on our TikTok at Risley and probably on our Instagram as well, where I'm on swings. And at that point in time, like things were, I was feeling things, but I was like, all right, does this induce labor? And we were on the swings. We were just like trying to do anything and everything. So yeah, things just kind of like progressed from there. And I would say it was that evening that things started to go faster and become more intense. So that evening I started to, I tried to go to sleep. So I think I took a warm shower. I think I took a bath. Cause I was like, okay, this is my moment. I'm not going to get a water birth, but I'm going to, you know, take up all the water that I can before my birth. And so I like had this really relaxing bath. It was great. I just tried my best to like get into a relaxed state and I tried to go to bed, but my contractions were just like out of control and I was feeling pain. And at first I was able to still like lay down through it, but I was kind of like shifting in my bed, and our birth plan was to labor at home as long as possible. So, you know, I was in my bed, I was texting my doula and saying, you know, I'm really feeling these contractions. And she's like, okay, well, you know, we've talked through some of the methods to make you feel more comfortable, you know, take another warm shower if you need to. Like, whenever you say like your contractions are getting closer and closer together, then call me and I'll come over. But this was probably at like, I don't know, I want to say like maybe 2 in the morning. So it was a while before she actually came. So at one point I couldn't really lay down anymore. And I started just pacing. I started pacing our room, and Ali was trying to sleep, but I was kind of like just groaning through my pains and like rumbling through them. And, you know, I would stop, I would feel the contraction, I would like breathe through it. And then they started to get more and more intense. And at a certain point in time, I had done another warm shower. It like kind of had run its course, and I was like, okay, you know, something else has to be done here. So I think it was around maybe five. Yeah, I want to say maybe around like 5 or 6 in the morning, my doula came and she was like, all right, like, let's do this. She put a TENS unit on my back. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's basically like electrical little pulses. And I mean, I don't know exactly how it works, but at least for me, those pulses on my back took the pain away, as far as like my mind off of the pain.
Right.
It helped me focus on that. And so it really helped with my pain management. So I had the TENS unit on, I continued to like pace around, breathe. And then there was a certain point in time where my doula was like, okay, let's get the ball. Why don't you try to like sit down on the ball to try to alleviate some of these pains? And I tried to sit down on the ball and I was like, nope, can't do it.
And because it hurt like, so bad?
Not because it hurt bad, because I felt that if I was going to sit down,
Avery was going to come out.
The baby was going to come out. And she was like, okay. She was like, it's time then. Let's go. And yeah, so she was like, okay, it's time to go to the hospital. Like, we're doing it.
in that time, okay, so that's like 2 a.m. through what, 6 a.m., 7 a.m.?
Yeah, I want to say like through 7.
Okay, maybe. So we just have to pause because this is a diabetes podcast, and yes. I would love to set the scene. For somebody who doesn't have type 1 diabetes, you're going through everything that you just described, right? Mm-hmm. However, I need you to share more about like the numbers though. Like, were you checking your Dexcom? Did you not care at all? Were you like, Ali, look at my phone and just let me know if I'm like really high or really low? Like, what did you, were you not able to like feel maybe the sensations of high or low because you were so focused on the pain? Like, what was that like?
I was honestly so focused on just like the pain, but like the baby. I was like, okay, this is our moment. Like, we are going to give birth soon. I don't know when, but like it's happening. So I think it's twofold. Like, of course I was checking my Dexcom and my blood sugars. I could probably even like go back to my Dexcom and look at them.
Do you know what they were? Like, do you remember?
Honestly, I wasn't concerned. So I know that I must have checked and they were probably fine. They were fine. I remember like while I was pushing and through the birth, and like, we'll get there for sure. But I think during those contractions, I was completely fine. I wasn't even thinking about diabetes, to be honest.
Yeah. That's like, I felt like the only time I've been able to feel that was when Chris proposed to me. Like, yeah. I felt like I didn't even have diabetes. It was just not even in the back of my mind. Like, it was so far buried down because you're just so present in that moment. So I think pain definitely like takes you, you know, into that space of like, just this is the only thing that I'm focused on.
Yeah, I think like immense joy, immense pain, like those types of extremes just like completely take you out of your mind and like more into your body. And I don't know, in those instances, at least for me, I totally forget about diabetes.
Okay. So you're now, it's like 6, 7 a.m. You're now ready to go to the hospital. Who's driving? Where are you sitting in the car? What was in your birth bag? Like, give us the transitionary details.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, okay. Well, our hospital was about 40 minutes, I want to say, away from our home, because we moved, you know, we moved while I was pregnant. And so, yeah, our hospital was a little far. And Ali was driving. I was in the passenger seat. Our doula was like following us in her car. And I was just kind of like again, like breathing through it. I was like, can you put some music on? Like, I was kind of holding on, and I was just like, when a contraction came, I would like kind of breathe through it, and I still had the TENS unit on. So I was kind of just like, I had my seatbelt on, but I couldn't really be contained. I was like, I have to like move. I have to get up.
Yeah.
So I was kind of just like wriggling around in my seat, but we got there. And I think what happened was, well, Ali didn't park. He was just like,
just
go
left
in
the
there.
Car.
Yeah. And then I think he went in with me, but then the hospital security was like, no, you need to move your car right now. And he was like, but I need to go with her. Like, and they're like, no, you need to move your car.
Ali's like, there's no valet here.
Yeah. He's like, what do you mean? Like, I don't care about my car. But yeah, they were like very stern. Like, you need to move your car right now. So actually, that was a really scary moment for me in this birth story, because in that moment, like, my doula was still parking and I was alone. And I think one of the fears that I had was, like, I mentioned in the last podcast, is like, I wanted someone to advocate for me in the hospital. And I felt like, okay, well, here I am at the hospital and I'm alone.
Right.
So I got very scared in that moment. And it was probably a mix of things, but I started to like cry. I was like, but my husband's not here. And like, you know, no one's here to help me. And then my doula came in, and at first, because of COVID protocols and everything like that, they were saying like, no, she can't come in with you. She can't come in with you. Then finally they let her come in. So while Ali was parking the car, she came in with me, and they did like an intake at the hospital. And they're like, okay, you know, well, how are you dilated? You know, how much? And they start doing just these examinations. And really, one of the things that maybe I didn't enjoy about that was like, no one was really talking to me. They were like, okay, she has diabetes. You know, who's managing her insulin? And actually it was me. I was the one who was managing my insulin and everything at that time. They were like, okay, how far is she dilated? You know, where are we? And yeah, it seems like no one was really concerned with me. So that's why, for me, I think it was really important for me to have my doula there, because she was like, hello, is anybody going to ask her like how she's doing? Like, you know, she's here. What do you need to know? Like, so that was really helpful for me to have that person there. And I think from that point forward, things started to feel much better after that. You know, they did the intake, they took me to a room, and that's where I had more control over my environment and where I was able to create the birthing environment that I wanted, ideally. And so what we had talked about, and I guess this kind of gets to what was in my hospital bag, but what we had talked about, Ali and I had talked about, is like, we really, the aspects of a home birth that we liked, that we wanted to bring into the hospital setting, were that like, you had control over the lighting, you could have your own music, right? You could move around, you could, you know, have all of these different aspects. Some people even bring like pictures of family members into the birthing room. Like, it's just about creating your own space. So we created a birth plan that said all of our preferences, but in my hospital bag, we had LED candles. So we put them in the room, we turned down the lights, we had a playlist that we had. So we like hooked that up. We had a speaker, we had a long charging cord, which anyone and everyone should purchase a long charging cord, like a 20-foot charging cord to take with you, because you're going to need it. And you're also going to use it for the rest of your life. It's like the best purchase we've ever made. And what else did we have? I had lots of snacks. I think another thing that doctors, or at least hospitals, tend to tell you is that like, you're not supposed to eat during, you know, birth. But my doctors supported me in saying, like, no, you can eat whatever you want. And like, you need energy. Like, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Right.
You know, eat what you need to eat. And my doula was supportive of that as well. So, and I love snacks. So there was tons of snacks in there. Another thing that I think I was concerned about is that, as I told you, I loved my water with lemon. And I knew that that naturally is something that helps with inflammation and like just flushing things out. So I had like lemon juice to have after birth and like during. I had, I think, coconut water if in case I got low. Yeah, so I had like all my low things. I had snacks. I had the charging cord. And then I think what they usually tell you to bring, which is like an outfit for the baby, comfortable clothing for yourself, things to take a shower with afterwards. Yeah. Like so,
insulin, like Dexcom.
Yes,
I
had extra pumps. I had extra insulin. But I definitely packed all of those extras, but I didn't worry about it too much because I was like, oh, well, I'll be in a hospital. Like, they had those things, but I did pack them just so that I had my, what felt good for me. What else did I pack? I'm trying to think. Can you think of anything?
I have not went through pregnancy yet, so I like, cannot think of anything. Like I stopped at like the obvious, which was pump sites, Dexcoms and insulin.
Dexcoms and insulin. Yeah. I had my little diabetes bag. So I think that was pretty much, you know, most of it. And then, so we set up the room and we put on our music. At that point, I was still going through like some pain, but I was able to move around. They hooked me up to the machines, but I was like, it's very important for me to be able to stand up when I need to and move around. So I was able to do that. Mm-hmm. Ollie and I were dancing to like music and anything to like, you know, be more present in that moment and take my mind off of it. And this is really when I started to notice more of my blood sugars, because it was not only, I think, stress from being in the hospital setting, but I think for me, it was, okay, now you're starting to feel the stress of like, this is actually going to happen very soon. And so that caused my blood sugars to start to go up a little bit. And I had another thing that was my choice. I wanted to be in control of my insulin needs the entire time. I didn't necessarily want to be hooked up to like an insulin IV. I wanted to be able to do everything with my insulin pump. So I signed something that said like, you know, you're signing off to this, you're in charge. And I was in control the whole time, you know, there, and I think, like I said, I didn't want to be connected to something. So I wasn't, I just had my insulin pump. I was checking my blood sugars every once in a while. I made sure that my phone was charged with the extra long charging cord. And I was just checking my Dexcom. And when I needed it, I was giving myself insulin. And then I think eventually I just put on a temp basal and an increased temp basal to help me through the birth. And my water actually never broke on its own.
Oh, wow.
They had to do it for me. So they did that. And then really soon after that is when they were like, okay, you're going to start pushing. So, you know, I started to feel that. They're like, okay, we're going to do a few practice pushes. This is what it's going to, you know, feel like. Don't hold your breath, right? You're going to want to like breathe through it. And it was so interesting because again, like if you've never seen someone go through this or if you've never been through it yourself, it's what you see in the movies. And in the movies, it's like bearing down and holding like, but they're like, yeah, you don't want to do too much of that. At least my doctor's told me, like, you don't want to do too much of that, right? Like, you want to breathe. You want to take some time to recover after the push. And then, like, if we tell you, like, okay, we're going to get back into it, like, get back into it. So So
Wow.
I think that was really nice to have, people who were coaching. So I think innately the nurses in the hospital were just great nurses who were supportive. But my doula was also there, like saying, okay, this is what's going to happen next. This is, how you're going to get through it. This is how you're going to breathe. And that was really helpful. I think overall, I pushed for maybe 45 minutes, which is pretty sh a short amount of time. I mean, there's definitely been shorter, but there's also definitely been longer from what I've heard.
Yeah.
And then 45 minutes later, he was here. And it was just like the most incredible thing. They were allowing me to see it. So they put up a mirror and they said, like, do you want to see it? And I was like, sure. But I was also pushing. So I was like really concentrating on pushing. So I hardly like really saw anything. But they also asked me, like, do you want to feel his head? So
Oh.
as I was pushing, I felt his head and his hair. And I think that for me was just like a little bit more motivation, like, okay, let's push this baby out.
Right, let's get him out.
So let's do this. And I pushed him out. And then immediately, again, in our birth plan, I wanted that skin to skin. We wanted to do like a delayed cord clamping. And we wanted what they call golden hour, which is like that uninterrupted time where that baby is just on mom's chest. And if you attempt to breastfeed at that time, then, that might be a time to try to start. But it's really just about like the skin to skin bonding. So we had that time and it was just amazing. It's just like a surge of emotions and feelings and like change and excitement all at the same time. And then it was just really peaceful. I think what was nice is that the nurses kind of left us alone. When they said uninterrupted, it was truly uninterrupted. So they left us alone and it was just me and Ali, and our doula was there, but like just taking pictures for us and really just kind of being there if we needed her. And it was our time as a family. And I think that was really special and something that I wanted. And, during that time when it came to my blood sugars, I, of course, like checked in. And I, like I said, I had set that temp basal. I think I gave myself another correction because I was trending a little bit higher. But overall, I don't think I went over 200, I think, during that time. So I think it was like, at least for me, it felt relatively safe for that birthing experience. And there was never a time that I went low during that time. It was just really, I was just so focused on bringing this new life earthside. So,
Yeah.
yeah,
And
so it
that's
was
another thing
special.
that you hear too is like, oh, like as soon as you have the baby, your numbers are going to plummet and you're going to be so low and your insulin needs have to like drastically drop. And it makes it seem like almost not in the movies because there haven't been any like too many pregnancy movies, but like in, I guess, the books or, you know, what you hear is just like it's so immediate when what I'm hearing for you is a lot of this was, it was gradual, it was over time and it was you being able to balance because you could trust in your body and you had control over that and you were in a great place with your management, you know, have the ability to be present with Avery as well, which was and Ollie, of course, which was so huge.
Yeah. And that's exactly, again, part of my vision of like, that's what I wanted. I wanted to, yes, be in control, but not feel like I was so concerned with my diabetes that I had to like look at my phone all the time or that I wasn't feeling well. Like, I just wanted to feel good so that I could be present in that moment and not think about anything else. And I think I achieved that. And it was gradual. And even afterwards, like you said, Lauren, a lot of people say that it's immediate, like your insulin needs change right away. And I guess relatively you can say that it could be immediate, but the reality is again, there's a lot of different experiences with birthing. Like I had a vaginal birth and it wasn't I think it was for me the stress of like pushing, but it wasn't so much like the endurance. I didn't push for that long. So for me, stress was more of a factor. So my blood sugars actually went up. Whereas someone else, if they're pushing for more like, I don't know, 4 hours or 5 hours, maybe their blood sugars would trend lower. And that's what they have to think about, is like maybe going low during that time. And afterwards, or even a different birthing experience, right? Like if you're thinking about a C-section, a cesarean section, you know, that's a different type of birth experience where it also, there's maybe more of a potential for an infection, or there's a longer recovery time because it's cutting, you know, muscle and tissue in that different area. So it might be that the insulin needs aren't drastically changing because your body's under stress. So again, it's like, it's different for everyone. So I think, again, you take this information and you store it and you think about it and you're prepared for it, but also be prepared for that not to happen.
Yeah, it's so unique to everybody's individual experience. And, you know, notoriously, T1Ds are known for having larger babies. And we talked a little bit about that in part one of your, you know, pregnancy journey on the podcast. How big was Avery? And were the doctors surprised, like, to know that you were type one? Like, what was that like?
Yeah, maybe another aspect that I didn't like from this hospital experience, but it was good. I mean, listen, I really did love our birth experience, but it was so interesting to me because I guess maybe with the T1Ds that had come through, it seems like they didn't really see a lot of the time that that individual was asking to be in control throughout the birth. So for me, I kind of felt like I was being, not that I was like the experiment, but I was basically like the case study, right? They were like, oh, what is she doing? So what is it that you do differently, right? Like, and how have you been throughout your entire pregnancy? And wow, where are you now? Okay, wow, that's so interesting. Like, it was just asking me all of these questions and almost like wanting to learn from me, but not knowing what to ask, and just like watching me, just like, wow, this is wild. Like, because they had never experienced that before. So, I mean, sure, it kind of like felt good in the moment, but also at the same time, I was like, can you leave me alone? Like, right. I just want to be here, and I'm just doing it, and like, everything's fine. But yeah, so I think it was a shock to most of the people that were coming in to learn that I was someone who had type 1 diabetes. And everything was like, okay.
And his size?
And his size, yes. So when he was born, he was 7 pounds, 3 ounces. So very, you know, normal, quote unquote, like a typical baby size, not super big, not super tiny, just average, average weight, and relatively healthy. I mean, I say relatively, but I mean, he was healthy. There was nothing wrong with him. And the other thing is that they did monitor his blood sugars. And I'm pretty sure they do this with all babies of individuals who have type 1, or at least mothers who have type 1. They monitor the baby's blood sugars. So they do a little like prick on the baby's heel. They take some blood, which is like so sad to hear in the moment, the baby cry when they do it, and they check the baby's blood sugar. And I guess this was not alarming to me because I kind of had some understanding of it. But for example, I wonder if I can pull it up, but they were taking his blood sugars. And I think at one point they checked his blood sugar and it was maybe like at a 44 or something like that, which us, we're like, what? That's so low.
Right. You're just like, oh my God, get him some glucose tabs.
You're like, danger zone, right? But I knew that that was like relatively okay, but it was also nice to hear from the nurses and they're like, no, I mean, like, this is fine. This is normal. We just want to monitor it and we want to get him some nutrients, right? So like If you're going to breastfeed, you know, you want to try to get that going as soon as possible. If you're going to give formula, then like, let's give formula so that we can get those blood sugars up a little bit more and stabilized. And, you know, after I decided to breastfeed, so once we got that going, they checked his blood sugars again and they were completely fine. So everything had really like stabilized and everything was fine. And again, it wasn't a concern. It was just something that they monitored throughout the first like few hours once he was born. And I think apart from that, like nothing really diabetes wise related to him. And then for me, as I mentioned, I had kind of signed off like I'm in control, but they still sent an endocrinologist to come around. So the person who was doing the rounds would come in and check on me and say like, okay, so where are your blood sugars? And what changes did you make? And just making sure that everything was fine. And I think that experience also just reassured me that I know my body best because not that I didn't take their suggestions, because I did. I listened to them and I communicated with them and I wanted that to feel good. But at the same time, you know, some of their suggestions, I was like, I know that that's not what I need right now. That's not what's best for my body. I think like they were being a little bit more conservative and I actually needed a little bit more than what they were suggesting. And I knew that. So I made those changes and I was able to get back to, you know, stable in range blood sugar numbers. I think within a couple of hours, I was like back within maybe like 120 range-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too. I remember when I was in the hospital a few years ago, I think I signed off as well, right? Because it's a liability. That's the whole thing. And I had signed off, but yet they still came in and checked my blood sugar. They weren't administering the insulin, but they would do at like 6 a.m., like before every meal, they would like check your blood sugar. And I'm like, it's literally right here on my Dexcom, but like, sure, you can prick my finger. And it was, oh, you know, you're a little low right now. You probably shouldn't give your insulin for this food. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like 79. And if I don't give the insulin for the food, I'm going to be like above 200. So like, thank you so much. Thank you so much for that suggestion. Like, I will take that into consideration.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'll definitely, you know, think about that. I think that's what I said a lot. I'll think about that.
I'll think about that. That's a good answer. Okay. So a big, you know, I had put on Instagram, like, what questions do you have for Jess? A lot around breastfeeding and just like the transition and, you know, what happens after, like you go back to your normal life and you're no longer managing your diabetes too, like just for, not like just for Avery, not just for the baby, but like that is your primary motivator. So can you talk a little bit about maybe that transition just generally and also like the breastfeeding experience as well in regards to, you know, are your blood sugars tanking a lot because you're also, or are they going up because you're eating for two, or is it because you're, it's, you know, the milk production? Like, let's talk about that.
You're like, I don't even know what to ask, but just like talk about it.
Yeah. There you go. This is like this is a Jess podcast episode. I'm literally just here to like hold this space. Like just go for it.
Yeah. But I mean, breastfeeding is, first of all, it is something that is like a full-time job. So, you know, and again, there's no right or wrong way. I had said this a couple of times as far as like how to prepare for pregnancy, how to birth, or how to nourish your baby. There's no right or wrong. I chose to try breastfeeding. And I think relatively based on what I've heard from other people, friends, family, other people's experiences, I had a relatively like easier time. So it took a little bit for him to latch, but once he did, it was like pretty flawless. And it, like, you know, it's a little bit uncomfortable, but you find a rhythm, you find a way to do it with your baby, and it should start to feel a little bit more comfortable. And at least it did for me. It felt a little bit more comfortable. And of course, there's definitely times where you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do this anymore. But it's, you know, I kind of pushed through that and we were able to to make it. And he's actually still breastfeeding now. So we've had a nice journey with that. But with breastfeeding, I think the biggest thing that I noticed is not so much while I was in the hospital, but afterwards, once I got home, I started to get so hungry, like ravenous. Like I just needed to consume all of the things. I like needed consistent snacks. Anytime that I was feeding him, I like was usually eating or drinking water or something. And it's really, I mean, when you think about it, breastfeeding is kind of like exercise, right? Like you are burning calories, your body is working, it's feeding another human. So you need to replenish that so that you can produce more and you can. So I was getting so hungry and just always needing a snack. So I think what we ended up doing is we had like go-to snacks that I always had by me that were pretty easy for me to eat while I was feeding. And at least in those beginning stages, I also saw that my insulin sensitivity went up. Again, not right after I gave birth, but probably once I got home and once I really started breastfeeding more and more, that's when I saw like, oh, my blood sugar is going low a lot more. And maybe I do need to go back to my settings pre-pregnancy. And not only did I have to go back to those settings, but I usually had to even pull back more because breastfeeding was just like, that sensitivity was way up, way up. So I was experiencing more lows. I had my low snacks everywhere. I had my regular snacks everywhere. And that was, I want to say, for at least 3 or 4 weeks where I was really experiencing that. After a couple of times, I started to see like, oh, okay, this is what I need to do while I'm breastfeeding is maybe I can have this as a snack. I don't even need to give insulin for it, but I just need to make sure that I have it. And then I figured out like my basal rates and things like that. So I adjusted those little by little, started to feel good. But then I found that like after a month, maybe even like a month and a half is when I was like, oh, I'm not experiencing this sensitivity anymore. Like and now I'm not hungry all the time and my insulin needs are starting to kind of level off again. So it was really interesting because, I mean, when you think about it, in a span of, I don't know, 3 months, my insulin needs changed at least 2 or 3 times.
Wow.
And so that's, it was fast.
Yeah. And that is, it also is so beautiful though, like how the human body works too, because I imagine that the reason why your body was so ravenous and hungry because it was, you know, like you have to produce this milk and like you need to feed your baby too. And then how the insulin sensitivity like works, like that's such a blessing because I know that with your menstrual cycle, the period of time, if you have a regular cycle that we see in clients that people have the most hunger, women have the most hunger with, is actually correlates a lot of the time with the time that their insulin resistance is the highest. And that could be really challenging because you're craving all these carbs for your body to get ready to have go into the menstrual cycle phase. But at the same time, you're like, wait, my insulin resistance because my progesterone is high and you know what estrogen's doing is it's not helpful. Where in this case, it was kind of a blessing where you're like, wow, I can eat all I want and my insulin sensitivity is up. So this pairing works well.
Yeah. I was like, this pairing, okay, I can roll with this for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But then, you know, like they say, like all good things come to an end. So
so then we changed our rates and cut back on the snacks.
Yeah. And then we, you know, we had to readjust. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a period of not only are these transitionings happening with your blood sugars, but these transitionings are happening with your insulin needs. These transitions are happening with you know, your mental state and also your sleep, right? Your sleep's interrupted and you're waking up at all hours of the night and you're sleeping at weird times. So there's a lot of things that you're juggling, you know, as far as your well-being and your mental state. So I don't think that anyone, of course, people say like things are going to change, but no one really talked me through that. And it was really important for me to, again, have that trust in my body and know what my body was doing, because it allowed me, again, to focus on other things. So I wasn't necessarily worried so much about my blood sugars all the time, because I kind of knew what to do there. But I sometimes didn't know, like, okay, how am I going to get more sleep? How am I going to, right? Like, how am I going to manage, I don't know, anything with the baby? Like, how are we going to do this? So it allowed me more time to really focus on those things rather than worry about my blood sugars.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is, you know, all comes back to the fact that you weren't just preparing your body and your diabetes for pregnancy, you know, 2 months before you started trying. It was like, this was just already like how you're managing your diabetes. You already had built that trust with your body. And this was just a change, right? Like we talk about that a lot. This was just, not that it was just, but like it was another transition, like, you know, other transitions in life, whether you're moving or you're in school or you're going back to school or you're switching jobs or, you know, this is happening or this is happening. It's just another thing that you have to learn how to navigate with diabetes, and the tools that you use for identifying your patterns and having trust in your body for one thing, apply to another in a similar way. Of course, every situation is individual, but like I like to think of it, the way that I treat my body and my insulin requirements for when I have guacamole and chips at a Mexican dinner restaurant is very similar to how I do that with pizza, because the macronutrients and the makeup and maybe the timing that I generally have those things is the same. And so it can laterally apply to different situations. So I guess the last question I want to ask you, Jess, is if you had one tip for somebody, not necessarily just going through like getting ready to have a baby, but I want to focus on the post, because it's the post journey, because it seems like that's where you were most, I guess, surprised by or didn't know how to navigate as much, because the sleep and the prioritizing yourself, that is hard. And I've watched you go through it, and I commend all mothers because you're balancing a lot. But what is that one tip that you would have for other mothers to be thinking about post-pregnancy in balancing, taking care of themselves, taking care of their diabetes, and taking care of their baby?
Oh, one piece? You're narrowing it down to one piece?
I'm sorry.
No. It's okay. Well, I have something to say about that, but I think also one thing that I wanted to just tack on to our previous conversation about blood sugars is that another thing that I think surprised me, that I knew, but like you just don't really realize until you're in it, is that some of the strategies that I might have used pre-pregnancy, or at least like pre-birth, you can't always use immediately after giving birth. For example, resting is like your main priority after giving birth. Your body has gone through a lot. You've gone through this incredible experience. You need to allow your body to recover. So if my blood sugar was in the higher range, and let's say one of my strategies pre-pregnancy or pre-giving birth would be going for a walk or going for a cycling class or something like that, you're not going to do that, you know, a week after giving birth. You're not supposed to.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not supposed to do that for quite a bit of time. And I'm sure there are some people who do that. But, you know, you need to give your body adequate rest. So I think in those situations, it was understanding that, okay, I don't have that as a strategy right now. So thinking through what else can I do? And at least for me in those moments, it was helpful to have some like go-tos. Like one of the things that I had prioritized before giving birth was like having a few meals in the freezer or having some go-to restaurants that we could order from that I knew, like, okay, I know exactly how to bolus for this. This is great. And I could rely on those things to give me a little bit more consistency with my blood sugars, and more stability with that. So that's just one thing, is just, again, rethinking how you might manage or how you might use some of those tools in your toolbox. But one thing that once you do get to the point where you maybe can move your body again and you can get back to some of the things that you got back to or that you wanted to get back to that you did prior to your birth, I would say it's talking to the people around you to make that possible. So taking that time for yourself. And again, it kind of goes back to what I said in the last episode, as far as you are the most important person in this piece of the puzzle, and this puzzle is having the conversations with the people that you need to have those conversations with, getting the support where you need to in order to have time for yourself to either rest, to, I don't know, rejuvenate in some way, to get back to something that you really enjoy. But for me, that was getting back to exercise and more specifically strength training. That's really, really important to me. I love that it makes me feel strong in my body. I love that I feel the benefits from insulin sensitivity with that. I love that I have a community in the gym that I go to. And, you know, that's what I was really missing. And it was hard, but after about, like, I want to say 3 months or so, I started to feel the mental toll of that. Like, all I'm doing is being with a baby, working, and I need to have some time for myself again. I don't feel like myself. And it wasn't to the point of, you know, postpartum depression, but I definitely felt like out of sorts.
Yeah.
I didn't have the energy that I really was used to. So I had to have a hard conversation for me, because it's hard for me to ask for help, but a hard conversation with my husband saying, like, okay, this is what I need. And he agreed. He was like, yeah, you definitely need to do that.
He's like, how can I help you?
Yeah. How can I help you? But, like, how can we make this happen, right? Like, yes, you need to do that. What can I do to help you? How can we make this happen? And with his job, he leaves really, really early in the morning. So he's usually out the door by, like, 6:30 in the morning. And he works 12-hour days. So he gets home very late at night. So really, the only window of opportunity that I had, my little, like, moment was – I looked at my gym schedule, was like from 5 to 6 a.m. They had this like strength training class. So we decided, okay, what is it that we need to do? It required me pumping in the middle of the night, leaving a bottle for him, and, you know, waking up whenever the baby woke up, he would give him the bottle. And I would take that hour to go do my workout. That was one of the biggest shifts that I saw with myself, with the way that I felt about everything that was going on, like immediately after giving birth. That was one of the biggest shifts, is like giving back myself that time. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a big chunk of time, but giving yourself something so that you can get back into that feeling, whatever it is for you. And for me, it was feeling strong. I needed to feel like I was, you know, getting out some stress and some energy in order to gain back some of that energy that I really wanted to give back to my child, to get put back into work. And not only did I see a difference with, again, my mental health, but I saw a huge difference in my insulin needs. I told you, like, my insulin needs started to, like, plateau and level off again. And it wasn't until I added that back in more consistently that I was like, I saw at least a 30% decrease in my insulin needs. And I just felt like, I felt like myself again. And that's important.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest takeaway here for me is it really is truly finding that balance of how you can prioritize yourself, how you could advocate for yourself, and how important the right support system is around you, from people in your family to people on the, you know, on the in the healthcare field. And it's been so incredible having you as, you know, a friend and as a role model for what a healthy pregnancy could look like, mind and body. And I think that it's going to inspire so many other people living with diabetes to say, oh wow, like I haven't seen or had this close access to, you know, somebody who had a pregnancy that like I want to have or that I aspire to have. And so I know that this story is going to impact a lot of people. So thank you so much for sharing your journey and your experience, and just thank you. Gratitude.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving me the space to share. And I hope that it does inspire people, but really mostly what I hope is that people see their possibility, right? The ability for them to achieve that goal of starting a family and being able to do it without fear and being able to do it in the way that they want to and that the way in the way that they envisioned. I think that's really what I see the power in sharing this story is, and in providing support, is it's not so that you can have a pregnancy that's ideal or that is exactly like mine. It's so that you can have a story that you want to have and live that out.
Oh, Jessica, leaving us with the soundbite of the day. That is, I mean, the core to what Risley is, right? And what we say every day is like your limitless potential and being able to craft like what that looks like. And I think that you, you know, really exemplify that. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you, everybody who has listened. We'll put some links in the show notes for you to support you on your journey, whether you're thinking about motherhood, going through it right, the pregnancy right now, or you are on the other side of it. So thank you so much, Jess.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.